In the Krishna conscious tradition, there are a few very important utterances. They are called charama shlokas and are words of God for the human being. These messages, so to say, from God himself are of course of the greatest importance for us in this world. Imagine God would come and speak to you, Shankar. I can assure you these words would be more important for you than the words which you have heard from your professor. These words, these personal utterances of the Lord would be more important even than the words you have heard from a person who is very near to you, like maybe your wife or future wife, or even your own father and other important persons. Imagine God would talk to you. His words would be of a great importance. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Charama Shloka is Savadamang Parijaja Mangikang Sharanam Vraja Ahantvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Yishyami Mashuchaha. Give up all other kinds of secondary dharmas and just surrender unto me. Then the Lord is giving his promise. He says, someone who does so does not need to fear what will happen with his karmas in this world. Don't be afraid. I will protect you from all dangers. And with this sentence, I will protect you from all dangers, Krishna refers to the dangers which come if you neglect your duties, your other duties. This is one utterance, a charama shloka of the Lord for the human being. There is another charama shloka which comes from the Varaha Purana, which is considered to be the most important message of God for the human beings in the Sri Sampradaya. Today we have devotees from South India who are connected either with Madhva or with Ramanujacharya. Once Ramanujacharya, a great spiritual master, was requested by one of his disciples to answer a very important question. And Ramanuja could not answer this question. He had to bring this question before the Lord, who is worshipped in the temple in Kanchipuram. I think his name is Varadaraj, the Lord of Blessings. The question which Ramanujacharya could not answer is a question which is very important for devotees. The question refers to death, the physical death of a devotee. We have heard many times in our scriptures that the final examina of the human being is a time of death. Yamuna, when you die, at that time your sadhana and your mindset will be tested. Whatever you are producing in Krishna consciousness at that moment, that is the most exciting and most important examiner. Because we all know, you know, when a person is under stress, then his real person will show. We can pretend so many things, but when we are under stress, then our real nature will come forward. Isn't it? We all know this. When we are under stress, how do we perform at that time? So the greatest stress for the human being is not some little disease. The greatest stress is not when he fails an examiner. The greatest stress is really when he lies down and dies. That's a lot of stress. So whatever you are at that moment, whatever you show at that moment, that will tell us who you are. So this devotee had a doubt. He went to Ramanujacharya and said, "My dear Master, what if at the time of death I'm so much under physical stress and emotional stress that I will not be able to remember the Lord? What will happen with me?" Have you ever thought about this yourself? You might be so much under pain, for instance, or what else might be there? So much disappointment or maybe so much separation which you feel from those whom you love when you are about to leave, that you are not able to remember the Lord. What will happen with my devotional life? So Ramanuja received this question and he said, "I can't answer you, but I will go to the Lord and ask him." And he went to Lord Varada Raj and asked him, "My dear Lord, there is this question. What will happen with a devotee who cannot remember you at the time of death? You have said in the Bhagavad Gita that according to the state of consciousness which a dying person has, he will go to his next destination. And you have also said anyone who remembers you at the time of death, he will go to you. But what if there is a good devotee who just due to circumstances forgets you? What happens with him?" When he asked this question to the Lord, there was a long pause on the altar. The Lord had already given his statement about the time of death and remembering him at the time of death. But now his great devotee Ramanuja Charya was asking him the same question all over. So the Lord paused. He made a pause. After some time, he gave an answer, and this answer has become the Charama Sloka, that is the important utterance in the Ramanuja Charya. He said, "Whatever bhakti someone has done, high class bhakti, middle class bhakti, low class bhakti, whatever bhakti someone has done, when this person dies and he cannot remember me at the time of death, I will remember him." This is what the Lord said. In other words, the Lord was saying that there is a general rule that whatever you think of at the time of death, that's where you go. But this rule is not applying to a devotee who, due to circumstances, may think of pain or may think of his loved ones who stand around him as he passes from this world. The devotee, if he has done some bhakti, and the Lord is very generous, he doesn't measure the bhakti like your professor in the measures your exam notes, Shankara, what you have written down and what you have forgotten to write down. No, the Lord will just remember you. No, for whatever little bhakti you have done. This is a very important utterance for which the Lord has stated in the Varaha Purana, and which he has repeated actually for all times. This is a very important thing which gives also pleasure to the hearts of the devotees. There is also a Sharama Shloka in the Ramayana, and it, I believe, expresses in the most clear way the commitment which the Lord takes to someone who has offered him even a little bit of bhakti. I would like to read this shloka in Sanskrit for you. Maybe even we can chant it together. That would be better. I will first, because most of you are more familiar with English than with Sanskrit, read this English to you. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, "My dear Lord, from this day I am yours," and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Please repeat with me. Sakrit eva, prapanoya, tavasmiti, sayachate, abhayam, savadatasmai, dadam yetat, vratam mama. Who knows what a vrata is? It's a vow, a gelübde. Vratam mama means my personal vow. So the Lord has given this vow. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, "My dear Lord, from this day I am yours," and prays to me for courage, Ananda Nitai is ready. I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Do you acknowledge that to say really, "My dear Lord, please take me," that requires some courage? I know of the Saint Augustinus, I've heard this from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who prayed to the Lord, "My Lord, make me chaste, but not just now." He didn't have the courage to be a celibate brahmachari. I think we often feel like that. "My dear Lord, let me surrender to you, but in the future, not now. Now I have my other plans also." In the Shankara, we feel a little bit like this. It takes some courage to say, "My Lord, I want to surrender to you." Isn't it Bhakti Priya? If you really mean it. But you can pray for courage. You can say, I'm saying this now, I want to surrender to you, but that's a little intense, you know. What if you really believe me and make me surrender and make some situations which are not exactly the situations I have planned in my life? No, but the devotee can pray for courage, and the Lord will give him the courage to go through all the consequences of his surrender. One is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, "My dear Lord Krishna, although I have forgotten you for so many long years in the material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service." See, although we may be afraid at this stage to surrender to Lord Krishna, we should know that actually this surrendering to the Lord's plan is really the best thing we can do. Because as we have heard from these Charama Shlokas, at that moment the Lord becomes very much inclined and comes very close to his devotee. I think we all want that the Lord comes closer into our lives so that our lives becomes more godly and more divinely inspired. I think we all want to feel the presence of Krishna, and we want to hear also something of his commitment to us, that he really says this relationship to my devotee Shankar is most important to me, I'm fully committed to it. If we hear such a statement, we become very encouraged in our lives. And isn't it those who are interested in loving affairs? I believe every one of us is interested in love in some ways. It is said, the Yajnavalkya has said, that human being has only two desires, to love and be loved. It's very simple. Can you feel also like this, that this is important to you? To love, you know, with your full heart, to be able to give yourself, and to also receive love, is of great importance to the human beings. Isn't it? We all know, some of us feel themselves blushing when they have to think about this, but it is a fact. We are in the temple, we can speak very honestly. It is not a problem for us. We like to love, and we also like to feel that we obtain love in our lives. And this is the two great needs of the human being. So if we can experience the love of God in our life, who will never cheat us, who will not run away with another girl so that we become totally eifersüchtig, who will not all of a sudden do something scandal in the Indian Times, God did a scandal in the God, who is most reliable and most wonderful lover, can come close to us and take care of us, I believe our crying in this world will be finished. I remember once Prabhupada was giving a lecture in communistic Russia. Communistic Russia means atheistic materialism. There is no place for God in the thinking of communistic Russia. He gave once a lecture and he said, all our problems stop when we come finally on the lap of God. And the communistic professors in communistic Russia were shocked to hear such a statement. And then Prabhupada said, just like a little child. When the little child has a problem, it cries, ah, 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 ah. And then some relative may come and put the little child on the lap. But the child will continue, rah, 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 rah. Then the brother of the little child may come. That lap will not work also. Then the aunt or the elder brother of the father comes. Will not work. Only when the child finally comes on one lap, the lap of the mother, will the crying be finished. Isn't it? I know that some little problems can be solved by relatives and so on, or by a candy. But when there is a big problem, only the mother can help. In the same way, Prabhupada said, all the problems of the human beings can be stopped when he comes to the lap of God. And that there is a certain reason for this. You must know that deep in our hearts there is something like a stream, a river. Like here you can look outside the window and see the river Elbe going just before our beautiful Veda Academy. So we have a stream in our heart, which is a stream of lubav, of love. You know, this stream means we want to love and we want to be loved. That is flowing in our heart. Now when this stream becomes diverted on a human being, we feel something like compassion. If the stream becomes diverted towards money, for instance, or towards a position, we love our money or we love our position, then it can become attachment and greed often. You know, when a person loves his studies, for instance, it can turn into, this stream of love can turn into great attachments to know more and more and more, attachments to position, that I know the most in this area, I should be consulted when there are questions in this area, and so on. You can say, safely say, that all the states in this world are diverted states of this stream of love, the stream of to love and to be loved. Whatever attachments you find in your life, whatever greed and lust you find in your life, whatever pride you find in your life, ultimately can be traced back, zurückverfolgen, to this stream which is there in the heart. Now the great bhakti masters have always tried to help the human being that this stream that he can make access to this, to make an access to this stream in the heart. I can guarantee you and everyone, if you would be able to contact the stream in your heart, you would really become satisfied, because your crying would stop. So the way they have said it is that this eternal perfection of love for Krishna is in the heart, and it can be accessed, it can be contacted by Shravanadi. Shravanadi means to hear about Krishna, and Adi means etc., to do the other processes of bhakti practice, to hear about him, to chant his holy name, and so on. I think all of us have experienced this in our lives. When we come into an assembly of devotees and we chant the holy name for a longer time, and we hear some nice description of Lord Krishna, we feel some satisfaction in our heart. Isn't it? Isn't that our experience? And we feel our affection, our attachment for Krishna, or for God, growing in our heart. That's why we like to go into the temple. That's why the visit in the temple remains our most important project throughout the week and throughout our days. Those who live in the temple, they want to sit before the deity, they want to chant his holy names, and they want to feel that they have an access to this under this pure stream which is there in the heart. Now whenever you speak of anything which has to do with love, then you have to speak with about the concentration of the mind. Krishna expresses this in the Bhagavad Gita by saying, "Vyayasayatmika buddhiya ekeha kurunandana." He says, those who are on this path of bhakti, who wish to contact the stream of love, they need to concentrate themselves. They should not be bahu shaka, means their minds shouldn't be many branched, but they should practice what is called ekanti bhakti, that bhakti which is focused on this one point. By the way, you cannot become successful in anything if you don't concentrate yourself. Like we have here our students from India who are studying in Dresden and making their doctors most properly. Doctor, also, you have made your doctor here? Yes. You know, if you don't use a little discipline, you will never make it. Especially in love, this is more important than academic matters. You know, you can do many things, but when you want to enter the world of love, you have to focus yourself. You know, we have in German language these things. You know, the husband comes home. This does not apply to a devotional marriage, but to a kami marriage. The husband comes home. The wife has been all day alone and with her mind, and she is very much frustrated and wants now to talk to the husband, and the husband has worked the whole day and he wants to read the newspaper. So he is here reading the newspaper, and his wife comes. Oh, did you hear so and so? Our neighbor has a new dress. I think she thinks she's now very beautiful. Said the husband. And then, oh, did you also hear, you know, that this has happened, and our children have fought with the neighbor's children? The husband, and then the woman finds out he doesn't concentrate, he reads his newspaper. Says, you don't care for me, you are not interested to participate in my life. You're always with your newspaper, and then she takes the newspaper whoosh, out of his hand. Now there's a serious conflict of interests. No, the husband says, you don't understand, darling. I love you very much. But then why I told you the important events in the life and you were not paying any attention? No, I was paying attention. Then the wife says, how can you pay attention? You cannot read the newspaper and pay attention to our relationship at the same time. This is a typical thing which goes on in a German household. Maybe not in an Indian household, but in a German household for sure. And the wife has a good point. Certainly this is a very good point. In loving matters, you cannot you have to be concentrated. So our Hare Krishna devotees are most probably the most unconcentrated lovers when it comes to Krishna, and therefore they are sometimes unfortunate in their spiritual development. They feel not really cared for the Lord. They don't feel the presence of the Lord because they have not paid attention enough to this point of concentration needs to be put on Krishna. Now, the moment you pay some concentration on something and you become determined in this, there will be help, especially when it comes to bhakti matters. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur praises concentration by giving us the little story of the little sparrow who lived at the bank of the ocean. She was having her little eggs there, but the ocean one day came over its natural tata, its border, and just stole the eggs. The little sparrow woman was so much feeling for her unborn children that she went to the ocean and said, give back the ocean or I will dry you out. The ocean just went like, dry me out? How is this? But the sparrow was so determined that she took her little beak took a little drop of water and went somewhere else and came back. She was actually determined to dry out the ocean. Narada, this caught the attention of Narada Muni, who was just on his way back to the kingdom of God. And Narada Muni went to the sparrow and said, "This will not work." But the sparrow said, "Before Narada Muni and the ocean, I give this solemn promise that I will dry out the ocean." Narada Muni went, "Really?" Then Narada Muni went to Krishna and actually to Lord Narayan. And there was Garuda was next to Lord Narayan. He was a little inattentive. He was there waiting for the Lord to give him a new order. And the Lord heard Narada Muni. So what is the report from planet Earth? Then Narada Muni said several things. Then in the end, he said, "I met at the end this sparrow who was trying to dry out the ocean." And Narada Muni told the Lord his whole story. The whole story. And then the Lord looked towards Garuda and said, "Garuda, here is a new order for you. One of your family members, your relatives, the little sparrow, has had its legs, its eggs stolen by the ocean. In this way, the powerful ocean has also offended you. Now you go and you dry out the ocean." "Okay," said Garuda. He went through the dimensions and through the into the atmosphere of this universe and finally arrived at the Indian Ocean and said, "Ocean, return the eggs." The ocean was silent. So Garuda just took one of his wings and made like this. And because he is so powerful, a whole, I don't know in English how you say, in eine Landeszunge, sagt man in Deutsch, you know, a whole, like a whole, almost like a semi-island was thrown into the ocean. Semi-island? You know the, how do we say this? Peninsula. A peninsula was created. Up to this day, you can visit this peninsula. It is near Ahmedabad. I mean, you go to Ahmedabad and then you go to the ocean, then you can see it. And then Garuda went like, making a lot of hot air, and the ocean started to evaporate. The ocean said, "It's all right. Here are the eggs," and returned the eggs. So whenever a devotee becomes determined, this is what the story wants to tell us, in loving matters, whenever the devotee becomes a little vyayasayatmika, or focused towards Krishna, at that time, Krishna's chalamashlokas, that is his utterances or promises, are moved into effect. In other words, the devotee who says, I have enough to be such an unconcentrated bhakta. I really do not appreciate my life any longer, where I forget about Krishna mostly and just think about my own plans for the day. Whenever a devotee becomes concentrated like this, then Lord Krishna becomes very, very moved and helps the devotee. I had a very convincing little experience in my own life when I was once going through the Himalayan mountains. At that time, it was a morning, I wanted to go to Gangotri. Who of you has visited Gangotri, if I may ask? Mainini, this is certainly a travel goal for you. It's really wonderful. It's a path like this, in which will bring you from Gangotri to Gomukh, the source of Mother Ganga. So we started early in the morning and it was rain. And while we were walking, we came to a little tiny ashram of Lord Rama, and I had heard from one yogi in Gangotri, who is my friend, Prasanna, Prasannatma is actually his full name, that I should really visit this ashram. He hadn't told me why. So I went to this ashram, and it was raining, and I was sitting there and chanting. All of a sudden, I felt that someone else was coming into the room. But I continued to chant, and then this other person was standing next to me. But it's in India, you know, people take the darshan, and you don't look at them, they don't look at you, because everyone looks at God on the altar, on the deity. I continued to chant, but all of a sudden, I felt a tear on my hand. Some water. I was looking up and I saw this old man who was taking darshan. He was crying. And as I looked very closely, I saw he was blind. But he seemed to see something. So I thought, this is very interesting. I will visit this old man again. I went out, I paid my obeisances. I wanted to start my journey early as to not come into these heavy Himalaya storms, which started at that time around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so I needed to reach my next destination where I could sleep before 4 o'clock. And I stayed there for 4 days. I visited other yogis in their caves, and I chanted, and it was a wonderful stay, which I have documented in a slideshow. Shishtikata was also there. And on our way back, we decided, let us go again to this little ashram. In the meantime, we had asked some of the yogis about this old man whom I had met and who had touched my heart, and they told us that this was Gangadas. Gangadas came to the Ganga when he was only 15 years old. He came from Vrindavan. He's a Ram Bhakta, and with his own hands he built this ashram. And because he really worked very hard, he did a lot of austerities, he became blind when he was around 54 or so. By that time, Gangadas' fame had spread far and wide, and one of the richest men in India, you know, they have this bottled water of the T-series. They make also religious movies. You have seen them most probably, about Kedarnath, Badrinath, and so on. He had become the disciple, and he had offered to Gangadas, "Gangadas, come with me to Delhi. I will bring you to the best hospital, and there you can actually get an eye operation for free and see again." But Gangadas had answered, "No, I don't need eyes to see the world. I only need eyes to see Lord Rama." So this was touching my heart. I was thinking, what a good bhakta, you know, amazing. So on my way back to Gangotri, I stopped again in the ashram of Gangadas, the old man, and I asked if I could see him and speak to him. And he said, through a servant, he said, yes. By that time it was already dark, but it was no problem because Gangadas Ashram was about a walk of 1 hour away from where I would sleep, and I had a torchlight with me. And there were no storms. So I stayed, and Gangadas received me and he gave me tea. Now I knew it was black tea because in the Himalaya the sadhus drink black tea. But because it was Gangadas who offered me the tea, I drank this black tea. Please forgive me. But I felt Gangadas black tea is alright for me. Usually we do not drink black tea, but it was from Gangadas hand, then I also drink black tea. And then I asked Gangadas, I heard about you, that you want to have eyes to see Lord Ram. How will you see Lord Ram? You are blind and you come every day before the altar and take your darshan, and you want to only see the Lord of your heart. How will you see this? What eye operation will you need, Gangadas? Gangadas said. He looked at me with his blind eyes. And I felt he saw me also. But he looked at me and he said, Nam Nam Ram Nam Ram Nam 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 Ram Nam Nam. That was his answer. Have you understood Gangadas' answer? He said, by chanting the holy name of my Lord Rama, I will see him. This was his understanding. And he only spoke about that. I mean, he said some other words, but because I don't speak Hindi, and he wouldn't wait for the translator to translate because he was so enthusiastic. That is all I understood, and was enough. He didn't say more than that. I really appreciated Gangadas because he taught me a lesson. Obviously, the Lord had taken care of him. He lived in an ashram. Obviously, he saw something because he came every day to the darshan. The Lord had given him eyes, spiritual eyes, and that's all he wanted. That's all he needed. He didn't want anything more. And that I thought was a wonderful story of bhakti. Now, I would like to now move in another subject, the subject where I believe all of you, I will touch all of you. When we hear such glorifications of bhakti, and especially we hear about it in the light that, yes, the Lord gives some signs from the transcendental position to take care of his bhakta, even in this life, we become encouraged. But I would like to ask you a question. Do you think you can live on this platform? Do you think Gangamayi can become Gangadas in her level of Krishna consciousness and be like this? Gangamayi has taken an operation, we hear. She did not say, I only need the Naam. She went to the operation. How practical are these stories of where Krishna takes care of his devotees for us? Wow, how realistic it is. And I want to raise a very important and interesting discussion for you. In the old culture, or in the old times, people who practiced bhakti were connected with a culture which supported them in their spiritual life. This culture is a little bit visible still in India, but I think those of you who come from India know that it is slowly declining or decreasing. The old culture which helped people in their bhakti development was the Varnashram culture, where there would be sufficient information how to maintain the body. There would be an interesting way to develop the mind through literature, through theater, through music, and so on. There would be an opportunity to perform good works for the society, and there would be sufficient opportunity to learn about spiritual subjects by going to the sadhus and the temples. All this was there, this society and this culture, Varnashram society and culture, was there to support people in the development of their bhakti. This was the ultimate, how do you say, purpose of this. Should a sadhaka reject this culture, or should he keep this culture? Obviously, this is a loaded question, and obviously I have an answer to supply. I personally want to bring to your attention that all of us who are bound by our bodies and by our minds absolutely require this supportive culture. How can the seed of bhakti, which is firm faith, you know, we have seen the faith of Gangadas and his connection with Krishna, his one-pointed connection with Lord Ram, how can this seed of faith awaken in the heart of a sadhaka if that person dies prematurely, dies before it's his time, or if he is so unhealthy and so disturbed? How can the seed of bhakti grow in someone who has mental problems and pain? There are examples in the old times of people who did not follow a Varnashram culture. For instance, Haridas Thakur, who was ostracized by society. You know, he lived in a cave and chanted from morning till evening. But do you think you can be Haridas Thakur? He didn't have any support of any culture, he just lived in a cave. There are other examples of people like the hunter who was saved by Narada Muni, who just gave up his profession and just stayed in a hunt in a hut, and people supplied him with everything he needed. Also in Christian life, this is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there are different examples, like for instance Jesus, who just left his Schreinerei, carpentry shop, and became a preacher, and Paulus, who just threw away his Roman armor, you know, seine römische Rüstung, and who just went hallelujah, and so on. But if we examine their life, it can be seen that these personalities embraced so much of a hardship. Haridas hardship, ooh, you know, hardship means problems. Ooh. Do you know Haridas Thakur? He was even beaten. You know, Jesus Christ was crucified. Oof. And many of these cases, these great sadhus, their life was shortened before the time came. You know, they had a brief, short life. You know, the sadhu life is not any comfortable life, you know, easy life. Imagine if you have a short life, what are the chances that you will become Krishna conscious, Bhakta Priya? We need still some time, isn't it? At least I need the time. Maybe we need time. Gaurahari. We need some
some little comfort in our lives so that we don't become mad and irresponsible people. So here in the Veda Academy, we have a great, great desire to present spirituality or present bhakti in a form which is livable for most of the people, for most of the devotees in the Veda Academy, and for those whom we approach with Krishna consciousness. And we want to present something which is called the Vedic way. It's a comprehensive way where people will get an idea how to maintain their body. That means a livelihood, but it means also their health, and how they can develop their mind. That means some mental stability. You know, I have seen that many devotees who come to Krishna consciousness are great souls, but their minds are so sensitive. If life goes a little, they go like, for they need 1 week to become stable again. Have you also noticed that? In the Veda Academy, we can see some of these devotees and witness them and investigate them very carefully, you know. The smaller thing may happen, and I know that some devotees will go like shaken, because they may be sadhus on one life, in one sense, but the situations are still so unstable that it is that it's not possible for them to really concentrate on bhakti. You know, concentration requires some strength of mind. Do you know this? To concentrate, you need to really be a little strong. It's not possible for someone who is a leaf in the sky, in the wind, who is it's not possible for someone who is attached to sense gratification, bhogaishvaya prasaktanam tayaparitasetasam samadho navidiyate. Krishna says those who are attached to wealth and sense gratification, we will not samadho navidiyate. We will not see samadhi or fixed concentration of the mind in their lives. We will not see this in their minds. But also we will not see samadhi in someone who is too shaky, who is labile or unstable. That is simply not possible. Who is not fixed in his dharma and so on. So I want to encourage you who work in the Veda Academy. You do a very, very important work. It's really, Srila Prabhupada said half of his work was undone because he felt he had not given this opportunity for his devotees to live stable. Prabhupada really wanted to do this also with through agriculture. Did you study him that he wanted to have farm projects where you live from the land? Hare Krishna, you came. Wonderful. Wonderful, thank you. Cooking and coming at the same time. So yes, this is what I wanted to say. I wanted to praise in one hand the glories of bhakti and the glories of a concentrated relationship with Krishna. And I wanted to say that on parallel lines, as we go through our lives, we need to also think about stabilizing our lives according to these dharmic principles. Both need to be done. hereinspaziert. Herzlich willkommen. Ja. Yeah, so that is, sorry, this is what I wanted to say. I hope that there was some inspirations for all of you. But ultimately, let us understand, even though a devotee may, in Kali Yuga, it is not as easy as in the Vedic times to get into your Dharma. It was very easy there. You had religious parents, and you would be born in a certain community, and your Gabadan Sanskara was made. That is, the parents knew as they were conceiving you that this was an offering of service to the Lord and to a soul which would come. You would find a loving community which would greet you, and you would then most probably help your parents, and you would grow into your occupation and your dharma, and then you would take on a role in society. And in the first part of your life, you would maintain your family, but then later you would, as other children were coming, you were easily spending more time for spiritual life. That is, you know, you would take vanaprastha eventually, and take care solidly of your bhakti development, and you would in this way bring your life to a perfection. You would have done your dharma so that the society which would help other people to become God conscious would go on. It was such an ideal God created system. But even now in India, you know, this is a dream. The Vana system has become corrupted caste system, where, you know, unfair judgments are made and exploitations would be there. This is the old time, you know. We should not cry after the old time, but I strongly believe we should accept the principles of this society, make them work in our lives, so that we can do something to maintain our body, develop our mind, perform some good works for society. Society can prosper, and in this way pay our debts to the society, which maintains us also, and then learn our spiritual development. I think we can do this. We can adopt these principles at any time, even if the society is topsy-turvy or unbalanced around us. I'm then dedicated to this four areas. I do something to maintain my body. I write. And I do yoga. I do something to develop my mind. I remain interested in different, how to use different subjects in Krishna conscious. I do something good for others. I go around as a sannyasi to preach Krishna consciousness, and I pray and chant and fix my mind totally on Krishna. And whenever there is this balance, I feel very healthy and happy in the life. It is a very easy. I invest in these four areas, and it's very good. Works very nice. So I want to encourage you to also think about this, and to help us in the Veda Academy. Also, our Indian devotees, please know, it is not by chance that Krishna has sent you to Dresden. You could have learned you could have gone to, you could have ended in Frankfurt, or in one of these nice Thüringer towns, you know, Sachsen-Anhalt, or I don't know, or anywhere, but you are in Dresden, near the Werder Academy, so please come and recharge your batteries. And also, when you go back to India, please remain in contact, find out of our work, and maybe we can be connected. I have now an invitation to sing Har Chalam. that is already there. And, God. So, Hare Krishna, do you have any questions, my dear devotees? Please help me. Rajaram Prabhu. Rajaram Prabhu.
This thing you say in the end, this balance you find in the yoga, you feel, your activity which you find is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
According to our Dharma, many times we don't know what is even good for us.
Yes.
We maybe chant, we do many services, even tattva, but maybe we are not completely, it's not our.
Our Dharma, yes.
It's not really what we will be really happy in balance, our mind is
yeah.
The time. Otherwise, our mind is always going there. How to find it, or if it's possible.
This is a very, very nice and important question, Rajaram Prabhu, and I was thinking that you would ask such an intelligent question. How to find our Dharma, asked Rajaram. See, for the first phase in a devote, in a person's life, this may not be such an important question, because at that time he is mostly young and he goes through what is called the brahmachari phase of his life. And there, or brahmacharini phase, it's a phase of which is totally dedicated to spiritual knowledge and to surrendering to the spiritual master. A very good exercise to overcome one's ego. But as someone grows, there will be other phases in his life. Only very few will remain brahmacharis. Most will be grihastas or like grihastas. This we have to say in modern times. Then it will be very important that we find something which is according to our dharma. Then what to do? One very easy thing is to talk with devotees who know us and who can give us some feedback. Another way, I will start with the simple ways, to find out in what situation do I feel balanced, what feels right for me, where do I feel at home, and where are the situations where I don't feel at home. I find this in my life as something very, very important to ask this question, and I'm getting very good answers. Previously I thought I should do everything. Now I know I should do some things, not everything. But if all this remains too unspecific for us, then it might be good to take the help of Vedic sciences like Jyotish, who have a very clear it's very easy to see through Jyotish what a person is fit to do and what he's not fit to do. It's a science to find out a material subject, but your Swadharma is a material subject. It's not a spiritual subject. Swadharma means what you are suited for. Jyotish, and so on. The non-devotees find out, they also know it's important for someone to find what he is suited for. Therefore, when the working market
market was not so strained in Europe. There was a very common practice which was given to many people. It was called rollieren. My father was working with the German railway, and he had to take care of 5,000 people at one stage. Yeah. And he had his personal chefs, people who were working under him. He was not taking care of 5,000 people alone. He needed a whole group of, I believe, 50 people to take care of. I have to ask him. And he had a very simple method which was done. He said to his personal chefs, when people want to know what can I do in the Bundesbahn, in the railway, then you should just give them a few options and they should try different things, and then they will find out this is where I'm most effective. So this is a very primitive way. I don't want to offend my father, but it's a very simple way, and so on. Better than nothing, but Jyotish is much, much, much better. That's why here in the Veden Academy we wanted to sell a program to the big firms where they can find out just from the birthday of a person what type of person he is. If you want, you can go to one of our Veda Academy people and you can just try it. Yes, why not? And find out that there is a Mahabodhi. You can ask. We have our astrologer expert at the moment is Yamuna. He can you know how to do this with a Gadadhara is the, he's the author of this book. And he can just find out your birthday date, and then he can read to you what type of person you are. And if it suits you, then it might help. Jyotish is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Du kannst das noch nicht? Ach so. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Gadadha.
I have one question related to this, because you said that in the beginning it's not so important.
When you are in Brahmachari,
and then one point it may become important, But as I understand it, it's in the Vedic culture, they started from the birth.
Yeah.
In our ISKCON society, we start when the people get crazy because...
They can't just do it any longer.
They will not make it anyhow. So the question is, this is my challenge, or not challenge, doubt.
Yeah.
Maybe it is important from the very first moment to take care of this, to avoid the problematic that at one point they're just too old to still come to this satisfying balance.
Gadadha offers a very important doubt that in the Vedic time that I presented, that it is important to find your Dharma at a certain time, that is after your Brahmachari time, when you marry. But in the Vedic times there would be astrologers at the very beginning of the birth of a person. There were even there was this tradition to give a child the choice between coins, a book, and what else? What? And something else, but we know for sure a book and a coin, and according to the way the little child would walk, you would actually be able to make a few very good predictions, you know. So
See, I was thinking when I was talking about this of the type of people with whom we have contact up till now. These are devotees. Actually, I'm also thinking in an old model. In an old model. Let us say in the old model it was like this. Prabhupada had made a movement which was clearly a missionary movement, and those who joined the movement found their places in either doing the mission or supporting the mission and cooking, cleaning and so on and so forth. But actually nowadays our ISKCON movement has changed imperceptibly. Our movement is at this moment not at least working so much as a missionary movement. Our output in preaching is, let us say, reduced. But that is due to many accidents which happened. But the way ISKCON conceived was just a missionary movement. And we would attract missionary people or people who supported the mission. Actually you are right. Prabhupada didn't think that the ISKCON movement should remain like this. It was in need, you know, when you found a movement, when you want to start a movement, you need missionary people, of course. To maintain the movement and establish the movement further, you need all kinds of people. And yes, it is very good. It is very necessary to train actually a person, if possible, from the very beginning of his life, so that he finds it much more easier to prosper in life. He can have his missionary time, you know, where he surrenders to a guru and helps maybe the guru in his direct work. I can imagine, Shankarji, you are a little tired today. What should we do? Would you like to drink some water for some time so that you don't suffer so much? Why don't you just go down to the kitchen, take a glass of water, because you are my most struggling listener today, and I feel some great sense of compassion in my heart. This helps. Just go down to the kitchen, move the body, drink a glass of water, and come back. Yes, is another. Hare Krishna. this is certainly true, Gadatha. We should, yes, let us see when you get the Kalakanda and Gadatha child. Then immediately the training starts. Harmonium. If he is a musician, little genius. Then already when he is 10 years old, or she, whatever the child is, then he or she knows already everything. And we only say yes, 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 yes. Fully trained. Yes. I'm sorry. Let us ask Gadatha. Rajaram, I will come back in a moment to you, or is it immediately related?
Related.
Okay. Then after Rajaram, I will request you to say.
I was thinking, in the Vedic culture, the Indian people we see in India, they are trained to listen, to obey the older, you know, they get training. They can prepare them to get married, to get take their dharma.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody will tell me before I become devotee, I will not take him even seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have different backgrounds.
We have different backgrounds. Yes, but...
I was thinking Brahmacharya being a little trained to become like little human.
Yeah.
Yeah. I speak from my
thinking. It's a fact that only a person who is having some background of the Vedic culture will agree to training. Yes. So let us say the training should start as early as possible. If he is convinced like this. I would like to tell you from the discussions which I have with my god brothers who are serving as gurus to others. It has become a growing concern for us to see that the disciples are properly placed in their lives. It is important, because so many devotees, more than tolerable, have again gone a little bit back in their spiritual practice due to this thing. Their proper situation. Some outsiders of the ISKCON movement say, no, the reason what a person needs is after some time some more rasika informations is required to help him to be stable. This is not a very valuable assessment of the human being and the state on which most of the devotees are, and we can see the members of such movements struggling with the same issues, you know, placing themselves in life. It's something you can't avoid unless you are a very unless you are, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, unless you are on the level of rag bhakti, that is a deep absorption in Krishna, and you can't force someone to go there or so on. It's a matter of deep spiritual maturity to come there. It's not something which can, you know, you can quickly jump. Yes, please give us your good your hands was up. Yeah. Yes, please tell me a good name again. Subramanian Sharma. Yes, please, Subramanian.
You said we have to be moved to the society, do something for society. Here in Germany, how can you realize this move to the society? Because the society
doesn't know you as much as
in India, for example,
if you
have such a gathering. I mean, it's normal. But here, it's an unusual gathering of very few people.
Yeah, very few. It's a minority
and
gathering.
The other one is extreme.
Extreme in another direction.
How can you help the society, and how can the society know about you?
There are some things which we can call a common help of others. It's in the immediate surroundings where you are. You can be kind, and you can control moods which are not good in you. You can be a good example, and those who wish to get some spiritual informations from you, you can give them spiritual knowledge. In our Western society, the usual help to be offered is really spiritual knowledge. You can either do this personally by finding people who are interested in spirituality, or you can support the temple like you are doing. You are getting a very important book on Ramanujacharya through your contacts in India. That's, you are helping the devotees to help others, in other words. By supporting those who help society, you can also help. So you can support our Mandir. This is this is also a temple. It's an academy with a temple. It has both functions, and in this way help the German society. How can you do good in the society where you are? Well, you should give an example of a principle-centered person, although there may be some bad things going on in your working place. You should not fall prey to this, but give a principle-centered dharmic example. That is a good help. It's a very good help you can give. And by general kindness, you know, like when you see an elderly person requiring help, maybe they can't cross the road, then you are there and you are going over the road, you can help. These simple dharmic things to help other people, that's a way to act properly. Some general help, and then usually it is advice to help, because you may not be in a position to give so much spiritual information, because you are there in a certain environment, an academic environment. So if you all of a sudden give spiritual lectures, that may not fit altogether. So you could help, maybe some income which you have, a little donation of 5 euros you can give in the donation box, so that the deity worship is taken care. Simple things like this, you know, we can help others. You can help the devotees here like this. And when you come back to India, I think you should make a plan B, to maybe do something like an... What is your expertise? Computer, isn't it?
No, material science.
Material science. What does this mean with material, isn't it?
Materials.
Yeah.
New materials.
Plastic.
For technology and engineering.
Technology and engineering. Yes.
Aircraft.
For aircrafts. Yeah. Oh. Maybe there you do something in India. I think it is good to help in India. Something, support an orphanage, or offer some help to an orphanage. Something like this. You know, make some plans like this. It's very important for a balanced life to serve others. That's very important. We get so much service. I'm talking on the Dharma level of what others do for us indirectly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Your good name, please.
I was interested to know...
Your good name, please.
N.K. Mukhopadhyay.
Mr. Mukhopadhyay, yes.
The full name is Nilay Krishna Mukhopadhyay.
Oh, Nilam Krishna Mukhopadhyay, yes.
Yeah, I was interested to understand more of what are the various types of bhakti, because bhakti seems to be a very general term, and there might be some classification.
Yes. There is sadhan bhakti. Sadhan bhakti is bhakti where you may not still have that love in your heart, but you practice as if you have. This is the big. You do things like chanting. You do things like arati. You practice like an apprentice in some firm, who may use a tool, but who may not have the full knowledge about the screw driving and so on. In sadhan bhakti. Then comes bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti is a bhakti where you have already a genuine bhava, or feeling of love and affection for the Lord. And then comes prema bhakti, where you are fully blossomed in the love of Krishna. Then, generally, there are 9 processes of bhakti. Navanga bhakti, they are called. It starts with Shravan, hearing about Krishna, Kirtanam, praising him, smaranam, meditating about him, archanam, like we do here, aratiks, you know, worship, doing all kinds of services, pada sevanam, and ultimately it comes in sakyam, feeling yourself as a friend of the Lord, and then atmanivedanam, surrendering fully to bhakti. These are nine processes of bhakti. There are three types of bhakti, sadhan bhakti, and then there are different variations of bhakti where the love of Krishna is mixed. For instance, yoga mishra bhakti, that is where a person practices the processes of yoga and it gets mixed in his practice of bhakti. Or jnana mishra bhakti, where he is interested in accumulating knowledge but also wants to surrender and serve God. Or kama mishra bhakti, that is where he is interested in Krishna and worshipping him through the ninefold processes, but he also wants something big. That is a very prominent type of bhakti in India. You know, oh God, I gave you my little donation, now give arrange that I pass my examination, otherwise I lose my shraddha. It's kama mishra bhakti, it's called, technically. Yeah. Oh, then, and there is a bhakti of 81 differentiations. And I think you have some idea, some overview with this. The idea is that bhakti is inherent in everyone, almost as if, almost like fire, which is inherent in wood. It is there. It needs to be awakened only. Thank you for your wonderful question. And please come back many times more here. We feel so encouraged to see. You all have been contacted by Shankara, isn't it?
Yeah, I was here 1 year back.
Oh, yeah.
Then I have been in India.
Oh.
Just day before yesterday I arrived.
Oh, so you are still jet lagged. A little bit. Yes, thank you.
Basically, I'm from West Bengal.
Oh, yeah.
I teach in one university, Banaras Hindu University.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a North Indian.
Oh, very, very good.
I was aware of this activity in the Vedan Academy.
Yeah.
So essentially, Shankar is the responsible person.
Yeah, Shankara is our best devotee here. Yes.
Since we are talking about bhakti, I thought people should know who is the most greatest bhakta.
Yeah.
We know who it is, but I thought all the...
So people should know. Our Subramanian Prabhu is saying people should know who is the greatest bhakta. Now once Narada Muni went on a journey to find the greatest bhakta. And this journey brought him to different bhaktas. I will make it short. Eventually, everyone laughs because they know it is a long, 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 long. I once gave a seminar for 3 days on this journey. So everyone feels, no, not 3 days, please. We are hungry. We want to eat. He eventually arrived at Lord Shiva's place, and Lord Shiva was worshipping his Lord Shankarshan, and Narada Muni said, "You are the greatest bhakta. The Lord has equipped you with the ability to give moksha to people who pray to you. You are the greatest bhakta." Shiva said, "No, how can you say such a thing? So often I have offended my Lord. Like when I went on the side of Banasura, my bhakta, and went to battle with Lord Krishna. Now I have, and you know, my bhaktas are sometimes impossible people, like Ravan, who has worshipped me. I'm not a great bhakta. Go to Prahlad. So Narada Muni, Prahlad, Lord Shiva said, from the very moment of his birth, has remembered Krishna and never forgotten him. And Krishna was so impressed that when Prahlad was threatened, he himself appeared to save Prahlad as Narasimhadev. So Narada Muni went to Prahlad, Bhakta Prahlad, who is very often considered to be the highest Bhakta, and said, I found the highest Bhakta. Prahlad was sitting there, he was a king, but he sat under a tree in meditation about his Lord, all alone. Now, Prahlad, when he heard that Narada Muni said he was the highest Bhakta, he cried tears of disappointment. He said, Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni is the guru of Prahlad, how can you say such a thing? If you would not be my guru, I would be forced to act very... I am nothing. I only meditate. I don't do anything practical for the Lord. The one who is the highest bhakta is Hanuman. He serves as the Lord carrier. He serves as the Lord messenger here. And he brought to the Lord what is dearest to the Lord. This is true bhakti, to bring to the Lord what is dearest to the Lord. Mother Sita. He brought information about Mother Sita. And he served him even with his body. Hanuman carried Ram and Lanka, and then with his tail, he provided a white umbrella. Kings are supposed to have a white umbrella. They do not need a black umbrella. They need a white umbrella. So Hanuman has given everything. Then Narad Muni went to Hanuman. And of course, Hanuman had his many reasons why he was not the highest bhakta. And Narad Muni went finally to Lord Krishna. And when he saw, because he is the authority to say who has the best bhakta, and when he went to Dwaraka, news came out that Krishna had not risen from his bed. There was a severe problem. Lord Krishna was still resting. He was indisposed. Because the whole night he had cried and he had chanted the names of the gopis, gopi, gopi, gopi. He was feeling tremendous pangs of separation for these gopis who had given up everything, their family concern, their loka dharma, their stri dharma, just to be with him and to offer him devotional service. And therefore, according to the perception of Lord Krishna, it is the gopis who are the highest bhaktas. But most probably, if he would go to the gopis, they would say, no, no, no. Because that's a sign of love. Whenever you love, you do not get fed up with love. Love has no satiation. And bhakti has no satiation. You wish to have more and more and more. You will never feel, that's it. I have achieved. In South India, there are very great bhaktas, Andal or the Avatars, Alvas. Yes, Alvas. Oh, and we see that when the Lord picks his bhaktas, he doesn't care for their position. Sometimes very people who are in low esteem in the society. I have just heard about Udupi Krishna. There was this one, how do you say, cobbler? And this is the last thing I will say. His name started with K. Kanakadasa. Kanakadasa was a cobbler who was forbidden entrance into the main mandir so that he could not see Udupi Krishna. But he was always sitting before the mandir, and he was always singing the praise of the Lord, and with very nice composed verses, and he played an instrument also, something like a tambura maybe, or an instrument he played. But the brahmanas who would come had to pass him, and they thought, you are an untouchable, you are in our way, and we are meant to do seva, we have to be pure, and only by your vision, only by looking at you, we have become impure. Then there was a time where Lord Krishna wanted to show the superiority of Kanaka, so he somehow implicated him in something. I believe he gave him a bowl from his own Kalakanta. You remember it? Because there is a... No? Somehow he gave him some bowl from his personal offering plate, and it was found at him, and he was severely beaten. And Kanaka was singing, and the people came and they saw, you have stolen because you are so poor, you have stolen the golden bowl of our Lord, you are nothing, and they beat him with their shoes. Oh. At this moment their whole temple began to shake, and the big thick wall began to break open, flashes came, there was storm, there was dark clouds and a lot of rain at an untimely time, there was a voice from the altar, I will never accept your food again. You have heard my devotee Kanaka, who is worshipping me so nicely. Only because of him I'm staying amongst all you foolish smartas who only know the rules and regulations but not the heart of bhakti. Only if you don't instate my Kanaka, if you don't go personally to beg his forgiveness, I will leave this place. I'm totally tired of you. He was very angry. Our Lord was extremely angry. So all the brahmanas went to Kanaka, and they carried him on the shoulders, on the palanquin, and still to this day, the deity looks in the direction of where Kanaka was sitting. He looks in that direction. He doesn't look out through the main gate of the altar, but he turned around, and he looks there. This is the glory of bhakti. Glory, glory of bhakti. So now we have discussed so many subjects. Yeah. I want to thank you very much for your interest and for coming to our temple and blessing us with your extremely auspicious presence. And now we want to serve you some prasadam. Also, our Shankar is very hungry. I can see this. He's like the little son, a little boy. We have to take care now of our Shankar. Good. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai, Sri Pancha Tattva ki jai, Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.